I mean, I love our intro. I don't think there's a better intro to a fight or to a podcast.
I'll fix that.
Maybe the intro to Ballers, but that came after I started running to the Octagon. Welcome to the podcast, Talking Talker.
We're back.
We're back with episode 2.
DC, we're consistent.
Nick Swimmer, Dennis Rodriguez. We're consistently pumping them out right now, Nick.
Yep. Yep. 2 weeks. We're up to two in a row.
Two in a row.
It's no stopping us.
Yes.
Even in the beginning, we never did them every week like this. But before I get too excited, we must start in Westeros. Dennis, are you sad that last night was the last time you're ever going to hear this song at the beginning of a new episode of Game of Thrones?
I actually was sad, but actually I'll ask you, what did you think of the episode?
Okay, so first off, Dennis, I didn't hate it.
You didn't
I didn't hate it, Dennis. I didn't hate it like the rest of you guys. I'm sure you're going to be one of those guys, hard on the show, hard on my guys, D.B. Weiss and freaking, what's his name? DB and David Benioff. Yeah. I know you're going to be one of those guys that's hard on them, but I didn't hate it. Did you hate it?
I was disappointed. I couldn't believe that. Sorry, guys, for spoilers, but Jon Snow just straight up stabbed her just in that small little sequence.
I thought Jon Snow was dead.
Well, that was a long Nick, story. Yeah. That was a long time ago. Yeah. He's come back.
He came back.
He's been brought back by the Lord of Light, Melisandre. Come on.
I think I got to catch up from like season 4.
Yeah, the Lord of Light has granted him back to life because he has a purpose, which was to eliminate the Mad Queen, Daenerys Stormborn Targaryen.
I want her to win.
I mean, I thought it was shot well. I thought the whole thing was good.
Oh, it was beautiful.
I think I should have stopped watching after the Night King, the battle with the Night King. I think that was probably the most epic.
It went downhill. Episode.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't get it. I didn't get why it was so, all the twists and turns were pretty much wrapping up right at the end.
Okay, so here's where I believe we run into our issues as fans of the show.
Yeah.
Right? It felt rushed. I think that was my only problem. It felt rushed. I remember back in season 1, 2, you know, especially those two early seasons. Season 3, they started to kind of fast travel almost. It's like playing a video game where they would just end up somewhere. Whereas in the beginning, we'd have Arya and the Hound just riding on horses, taking a journey from the north to the south. And it would take a season of character building.
Yeah.
Right? Just the whole season was based on how she was developing as a character. We didn't get that because the episodes were only 6. It was only 6 episodes, so they had to speed things up.
Yeah.
I thought the scene where John killed Danny was extremely well done. It was well done, Dennis, because who else could have done it? Why would we need to get it drawn out, Den? Why would they not do it early in the show so that there would be time for us to process everything after it happened? You do it at the end, then people are upset about not understanding where we went from there.
Yeah. No, I agree with you with it being rushed. I definitely felt rushed, but I think it was shot well. If they had probably like 2 or 3 more episodes and just drawn out that last 2 episodes after the Night King, I think it would have been perfect. So that was my only thing that was bummer about the last one.
Is it the kind of thing where they left an opening for like something to come back in the future, or is there no way?
It's not coming back. The writers said they wanted to be so far away from this and the reaction from the finale, because they can't make people happy, that they went to an island with no cell service with their wives and their families and are just off the grid. They don't want to hear our observations of the show. They want it behind them. They're on the Star Wars. Those guys are on the Star Wars now, Den.
Yeah.
What do you mean? They're going to make the next Star Wars?
They're writing the Star Wars now. Mm.
Yeah, they're doing the next Star Wars.
Like the movie or a series? Movies,
the movie. Do you see the petition? 1 million people asked to rewrite that.
I mean, that's absolutely absurd. That's absurd. They spent $75, $80 million doing these per show, I think.
Yeah.
There's no way they're going to redo season 8. I also agree at times season 8 did not feel good to me as good as some of the other ones, but yeah. I think those guys were tasked with writing this great adventure that they did not write in the beginning, right? So after they got past the books, you saw a little shift in the way that the series was approached, right?
Yeah.
Littlefinger, Lord Baelish, and Varys, and Tyrion, they were all such big parts of the early seasons, and lately they haven't really played as big of a part, and I think that's because they didn't... Those guys did not know how to really write the stories as in-depth as George R. R. Martin did for those odd characters, as he calls them.
Yeah. No, I agree. But I'm excited for the spinoffs, though.
I'm very excited.
There's going to be spinoffs?
Three.
There's going to be. Well, all right, they said they've already greenlit one.
Yeah.
They've already greenlit one, but they're saying that they put like 6 or 7 writers to give them story ideas. They've greenlit one, but we don't know. Okay, how about this? Seeing Cersei and Jaime dead, it hurt me. Then it hurt me.
Yeah.
Seeing Cersei dead hurt me a little bit. It made me sad.
Yeah, I was pretty sad. But for some reason, I read a theory that Jaime was alive. That's what I was kind of hoping for. But I'm glad it worked out the way it did.
How about them putting the smallest rocks in the world up there, covering them so that Tyrion could pick them up and throw them out of the way?
which one's Cersei?
She's the queen.
She was bad, bro. Yeah. But like they humanized her at the very end. Like they got her right? She's like, not like this. I don't want to die.
Yeah.
They made it almost where Cersei had her first moment of vulnerability right at the very end.
Yeah.
Why couldn't she be like that a little bit more earlier throughout the show?
Yeah. And they actually,
I didn't like... I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dennis.
No, I was just saying that they forecasted their death, I guess, in season one or two, where Jaime claimed that he wanted to die with the woman he loved, which...
Yes, he did say that.
How do you guys remember all this shit? I can't... Like, even if I get super into a show... Like,
bro,
I can't even fucking remember it 2 days later.
It was easy. It was easily the best show that I've ever watched on television. Early. Maybe lately it hasn't been as good. I thought season 7 was okay. Hmm. I thought this was the season where, I mean, just some of the mistakes though, like the Starbucks cup. The Starbucks cup was on the fucking table. And then last night, they had a damn water bottle behind Samuel Tarly's leg.
Yeah. Really?
I caught on video.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So it's almost like they packed it in a little bit. And I think that's what's upsetting people more than anything. It's like they just kind of packed it in, man. And I truly do believe it was because they were tasked with writing this great adventure that they didn't really write. So they should have been probably asking for more help from Martin, but he doesn't want to give the ending to his books. He's still got books to write.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of Game of Thrones, we got the double champ here. And we're going to be joined by someone else going for a second title, right?
Yeah, it'll be if Frankie Edgar will join us later. And if he is able to defeat Max Holloway at UFC 240, he will join the club of 2-division champions in the UFC, joining BJ Penn, Randy Couture, myself, Conor McGregor, and Amanda Nunes. So he would be number 6. Amanda, Conor, and I held him simultaneously, but yeah, he would be the 6th guy to hold belts across 2 weight divisions in the UFC. So it's very special talent Frankie Edgar is.
We should make like a jacket. We should make like a, like, you know, like the yellow NFL Hall of Fame jacket or the Green Masters. We should just make a jacket and we should just start awarding him to these people. We start with DC and we'll see if the Talk and Talker jacket becomes, you know, what it should be.
Yeah. Walk over to Conor McGregor with a freaking jacket that isn't like, if that jacket doesn't cost,
we have to give
like
it,
we give him like a
kid's medium so he can just, you know, the lads can just go crazy.
$20 bills.
Yeah. You have to give Conor, like, you have to find Conor a like Versace jacket. You ain't giving Conor some just jacket from the jersey store.
It's like, take
He's laughing in your face.
Jacket.
You try to hand Conor McGregor a jersey jacket that says double champion. He'd be like, yeah, thank you, buddy. Like, get out of my face. Randy Couture, wrestler, maybe. BJ Penn, maybe. Me, a wrestler, maybe. You ain't giving Conor McGregor some jersey jacket. You better go to the damn Givenchy store and get him to make a personal jacket for him.
Yeah, we're going handmade.
Okay, outside of Game of Thrones, Nick, we'd like to bring you in because Dennis and I have been going for 10 minutes.
Yeah, I had to get you guys out of that.
This whole conversation, this Game of Thrones thing was not done. Lastly, Dennis, I want one more thing before we go too far. Bran the Broken is the king of the Andals?
So disappointed.
He barely Bran the Broken?
He was barely a character for like the last two seasons. You know,
He missed an entire season. He wasn't in the entire, was it season six? He didn't, or five or six, he wasn't in it at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. And I was like, they just plopped him in there. And I was like,
they said in Winterfell, they said, Bran, you're the Lord of Winterfell. I don't want it anymore. I don't want it for anything. Fast forward to King's Landing, which all of a sudden, winter is over, Dennis. Winter was supposed to be 10 years.
Yeah.
Winter was over. They were sitting there. It was so sunny and beautiful at the Dragon Pits.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
And they go, Bran the Builder, will you defend the Seven Kingdoms from this day to your last day? Why else would I have come here?
I know.
So, can I ask you this, Dennis?
Yeah.
Was Bran the ultimate bad guy, being that he knows and sees everything? Was Bran the bad guy the whole time and we just didn't get it?
Like, he actually set up everything to happen the way it did so he could be king?
Could you? I mean, really, when you think about it, Bran and the Starks are the bad guys. He told Daenerys, he told Jon the secret to mess with their relationship. He told Jon, knowing that Jon wouldn't be able to deal with Daenerys in the way that he was because she's his relative. He was the one that told Jon to let Samwell tell his secret. You know, he did it all. And he can see everything. He knows everything.
Yeah.
He broke their relationship knowing it would separate them. And then he became the king of the Seven Kingdoms. Is that how it works?
I guess so. That's how I read it. And plus, why is Jon going to the wall? What are they going to defend against? The White Walkers are dead.
At the end of the show, it looked like Jon was walking up north to live with the free folk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. But what's... Yeah.
There's no Night King anymore, but is the Night King coming? I mean, there's no Night King.
Yeah.
And what about Sansa? She gets everything she wants. She's the queen of the north. I mean, where are the Starks? How about... I didn't hate it, right? Because even though when you listen to it in that theory that maybe they were the bad guys... We started with their dad's head getting chopped off in like episode 7 of season 1 to them ultimately being the leaders of the world. That felt good to me.
Yeah.
And their mom and their brother getting killed at the Red Wedding to them all kind of having their moment felt good to me, but there were a few holes in there, obviously. But overall, I did not hate it. Dennis,
I'll probably rewatch it just to see, make sure.
Maybe we should add a fast forward button to the beginning of the podcast.
What are you talking about?
we'll talk about it again. Dennis.
I just got lost in Instagram for the last 10 minutes. I don't even know what the fuck you guys are talking about.
All right,
Nick. Lastly, before we get to Frankie, because he's going to call here in a few minutes. Deontay Wilder, Dominic Brazil last weekend. Deontay Wilder, the most exciting heavyweight champ, American-born heavyweight champ we've had since Mike Tyson. What did you make of that right hand that completely finished Dominic Brazil? I mean, one shot, it was over. I mean, the power this guy possesses is like not even from this world.
Yeah, it was almost like someone just pushed pause and just stay right there. Hold on while I just blow up your face with this. It was crazy. You rarely see in boxing like a shot that clean and that sudden. But is he ever going to fight Joshua? Like, that's the fight everyone wants to see, right?
I think Tyson Fury was calling for it. He goes, I want to see Anthony Joshua fight Deontay Wilder. He goes, it's time.
Tyson Fury fought Wilder, right? But he hasn't fought Joshua?
Fury fought Wilder to a draw, which Fury looked really good in. Got dropped real late. Otherwise, he would have won the fight. But the only one that's kind of been on the outside is Joshua.
Yeah, why is that?
He fought Klitschko. Joshua fought Klitschko.
That's right. I watched that one.
Which was one of the best heavyweight fights you'd ever seen until you saw Wilder versus Fury, which again was one of the best heavyweight fights we've seen in a long time. But it felt good watching those four fight each other because it throws back to the old days when Ali fought Frazier and Frazier fought Foreman and Foreman fought Ali and then he fought Ken Norton and he fought... Everybody just fought everybody back then and you want to see that today. So yeah, Joshua Wilder makes sense. And then afterwards, Joshua Fury makes sense when you have three guys that are that good.
Yeah.
They need to be fighting each other.
It's been a while since boxing's had like three recognizable names or even two recognizable names at the top that you were like excited to see them all fight each other.
Well, the heavyweights, right? Before, it was a lot of welterweights, Mayweather, Pacquiao. Then you had guys in the middle, Cotto, Canelo, those guys, Bernard Hopkins. Those guys were all the big draws, De La Hoya.
But the heavyweights has been a while.
Heavyweights had fallen on tough times because the Klitschko brothers were just, they had no competition. So the Klitschko brothers were the champs for 8 years and just really not getting challenged. So to see three guys that are equally skilled, very aggressive, with, it's very refreshing.
I cut you off. What's up with, well, I guess I did it on purpose. What's up with UFC boxing? Like Dana always talks about, oh, I'm going to change the whole fight game. It's going to be everything. Wait till the summer. Wait till this, that, and the other. Is it just like sound bites, or is there actually – will there be a time when there will be one organization and guys can box each other or do mixed martial arts or jiu-jitsu? Or?
I don't know. I mean, Eddie Hearn's promoter was with Dana last week at the Performance Institute, so maybe there's something there. A lot of times when there's smoke, there's fire when it comes to Dana. He says a lot of things, and people take it like, oh, it's just Dana White being Dana White. But a lot of times, a lot will come of those things that he says. It may not happen right in the moment, but he generally does deliver on a lot of those promises. So we just got to be patient and see what comes of this Zuffa boxing. But if it is come to pass, you know, maybe they can start to make those fights that we've all been pining for.
They have the I saw Masvidal and Pettis are going to have a jiu-jitsu match. I mean, I guess it would be cool. Well, it would be not ideal for fighters earning power, but it would be cool to have one organization where guys could be like, we'll have a jiu-jitsu match, and then I'll fucking box you, and then we'll fight in MMA. That'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah,
those boxers are making so much money, man. There's no way they will ever agree to being all under one umbrella. Canelo fought a couple weeks ago, make $35 million.
No, but I mean, wouldn't the UFC roster be interested in, like, even if we could only fight each other, let's fucking box, let's do jiu-jitsu, let's MMA. But then
it won't change the pay. You know, it won't change the pay. Yeah. It's going to stay the same. It'll stay the same if it's still under Zuffa, you know, Zuffa Boxing, Zuffa UFC, but a guy's just doing jiu-jitsu. I mean, we're making great money. I'm making great money. Yeah. Now, for this Miocic fight, I'm making outstanding money. But I wouldn't go from making X amount of dollars to XX amount of dollars just because all of a sudden now I'm just boxing. You know, it's still, I still have a contract, and I think that's how it would look.
Yeah.
So, well, all right, we got to get to the phone lines. The boy's calling. We're getting joined by the answer, the little engine that could, the man challenging Max Holloway for the UFC featherweight title at UFC 240. Former UFC lightweight champion joins us now, Frankie Edgar. Now we're joined by the former UFC lightweight champion, Frankie Edgar. He will be challenging Max Holloway for the featherweight title. UFC.
DC, you froze.
DC froze.
Frankie, you still hear us?
I'm still here.
Man, you're in DC's head. Usually he's a one-take wonder. This time he had to redo. Then his screen froze. You got him all rattled.
I got him nervous.
Whenever you have a star the caliber of Frankie Edgar on your show, you do tend to make mistakes.
Now he's stroking me. All right.
Frank, finally, right? Finally, you get this fight with Max Holloway that's been scheduled on a number of occasions. When you get the call, what are you thinking immediately after you hear it?
I was pumped. I got excited. You know, Ali talked about it for a while, but I honestly didn't believe it till it was official. So, I'm excited, man. It's been, you know, two other times we're supposed to line up. Third time's a charm, finally get it done. And, you know, it's perfect time for me. I'm helping Marlon get ready for his fight. So everything's going smooth over here.
Whenever you saw Volkanovski win that fight, how nervous did it make you, being that he had just beaten Jose Aldo and he was calling for this championship fight? And not only him, but there was a lot of people in the mixed martial arts community were saying, well, this guy now earns a title shot. They started to kind of forget about all that you've done because as a culture, we are what we see more recently. You know, there's a recency bias, and people thought that he had earned that title fight. What were you thinking after watching him win that fight?
Yeah, I didn't know what was going to go down. You know, like I said before, even Ali told me, you know, we got it. It's ours. I still wasn't 100% sure of it because I've been there before. I've been told I was getting a title shot. And of course, it got slipped from under me. But I knew anything could happen. Anything could happen after that fight. So I was excited to hear that they stuck with their original plans, and I got the fight. You know, I know Alex, he's a tough fighter. He probably does deserve a shot too, and he's going to get his time. You know, like I said, I'll run it back. I want to fight twice this year. I know Max likes to stay active, so Alex is going to get his fight.
When you look at Max Holloway at 145 pounds, he looks so phenomenal during his run up to the title and now as the champion. What do you see in this game that makes you go, you know what, man, this is the type of matchup that really favors me?
I don't know, man. He's a scary fighter. You watch him, the pace he brings, the violence he brings, he's definitely a scary guy to prepare for. I just think the fact that I mix it up well. The last three guys he fought kind of were right there in front of him. I'm not going to be that type of fighter. I definitely mix it up with my striking, my movement, and my takedown. So I think that's the difference that he'll see compared to his last three opponents.
Frank, whenever you go back to Max, and he just went through that, dog fight with Poirier at 155, took a beating, right? He got dropped three times. That's only May, June. That's only 3 months from your guys' fight. Is that too fast for him to come back, and is this the perfect time for you to be fighting him for his title?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not trying to look to fight a wounded guy or a guy that's maybe not 100%.
But Frankie, after watching that fight, right, when you fought Gray Maynard, right, when you fought Gray and you went five rounds and did you guys have a draw in the first fight? It was three rounds, right, or five?
Five.
Yep. Five-round draw, right? Could you have gotten back into the octagon in 3 months and fought again is the question. Especially against another guy that's as skilled as you are.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. I fucked up my ankle pretty good in that fight. So, yeah, I mean, hey, listen, I don't know. I'm not Max. He knows. He knows better than anybody. And he's a tough dude, obviously. He's a fighter's fighter. So I'm not surprised that he's jumping in. Is it too soon? I don't know. I mean, like I said, I'm looking for the best Max. You know, that's why this fight excites me more than anything. This is like kind of like a throwback to when I was fighting BJ the first time. No, everybody's writing me off. Everybody's telling me I shouldn't be there. I shouldn't even have got this fight. That's why I do this. That's why I think I do this sport.
What do you think it is that, I mean, you've been at the top for a long time. I mean, I was even going back through the fights. I was thinking, God, time flies by fast because it feels like you fought, you know, it feels like you fought Gray Maynard like 4 or 5 years ago, but that was 8 years ago. So how do you stay at the top?
I know, man.
How do you stay at the top for so long and then continue to be underestimated? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I'm used to it. You know, I'm the constant underdog, and it's okay by me because I'm just so used to it. And like I said, like the fact that people say I can't do something is probably why I got into fighting in the first place. And this is a perfect scenario for me to prove people wrong again. I think this is, 9 years ago, I fought for the title. So the fact that I'm still, a guy that's considered, a number one contender 10 years later, I think speaks volumes.
No, it's amazing. The series of fights, you've had multiple people where you've had multiple fights against them at the top. What I was thinking about last night was crazy is, you've had the people where you're the guy they just can't get past, and you've had a couple people that you've, stylistically you've had trouble with, but there's not many guys that have for this long had this many series and this many big opponents. You've also been at the same camp. Like, how do you, what do you think about when guys switch camps? I was thinking about it as well. There's not that many examples of guys that have switched camps when they're at the top and had success. Both of you guys have stayed in one place for a long time. And how do you keep, is it just a matter of your camp knows what works and you guys just keep doing the same thing over and over and no one else can figure it out? Like, it's amazing.
I mean, I don't know. I just think it's based on the individual more than anything. And just for myself, I just been constantly trying to be number one, and I never take too much time off, and I'm always trying to get better. Like, me and DC, we're getting a little old, but I'm still that same. I had to throw you in there, DC. But, I still have that same fire, man. I'm I'm very excited. I feel like when I got this title fight, man, I was, you know, smiling for a couple of days, and that smile's got to stop because now we got to get to work. But I'm excited, man. This feels fresh to me. It feels new to me, and this is exactly the perfect timing for this.
What's the difference? What's the difference? How do you feel? There's a quote the other day I read that said when you're 20 years old, I'm 46. So it said when you're 20, you would never believe yourself if you told yourself, hey, when you're 45, you're gonna think and feel internally exactly the same way as you do at 20. How do you feel today compared to, you know, when you made your debut? That was about 12 years ago. Was your first UFC fight, right?
Yeah.
Do you feel?
Yeah,
you still feel?
12, I think, here, yeah.
You still feel the same on the inside?
I mean, I think I do. I mean, some stuff hurts a little more, maybe, you know. But I feel like I used to get sore at the beginning of the week. Now I'm sore all week, but we're still here. You know? I do feel good. I feel like I trained so much smarter than I did in the past too. So in the past, maybe I was younger, I was beating myself up way too much. Now I train smarter, kind of know how to do it, and that's why I'm able to be efficient.
Title shot number 4, right? This is where we're at, right? Title shot number 4, but UFC championship fight, what, number 7? How many times did you defend the belt at 155? 3?
I defend 3 what? Times, yep.
3 times. So title fight number 8. Challenger on the 4th occasion. A lot of people are saying this is Frankie Edgar's last chance. Do you feel any added pressure when you think at 37, Frank, former champ, fought for the belt on a couple occasions, was not successful, but now getting that chance again to get back to the top of the sport, and everybody's saying this is Frankie's last chance. We love Frankie. Everybody loves Frankie, but this is the last shot. Is that any added pressure?
I mean, yeah, I'll be real, yeah. I mean, I know what's at stake. I know, you know, I'll never say anything's the last anything because who knows what could happen, but I do feel the pressure. You know, I put a lot of pressure on myself. I'm sure, DC, you do the same.
Yep.
You know, no matter what, honestly, I feel like I want to win my very first fight just as bad as I wanted to win my last fight. I'm a competitor. I don't like to lose. I want to win all of them the same. But, you know, having all this experience that I have, you know, fighting all these years, I do know what's at stake. I do know what's, you know, what opportunities may not pop up again. So, for sure, the pressure's there. I'm just trying to treat it like any other fight, though, and that I just really want to win that bit.
You know, as Nick said earlier, you've had some rematches over the course of your career. You fought a lot of guys. But when you fight a guy like Cub Swanson, right, the fight that is going to ultimately have earned you this title fight, and you beat him so dominantly the first time, and maybe I'm asking this in a sense that I'm stepping into the same situation. When you went into the Cub Swanson rematch after being that dominant, did you think to yourself, how do I do it better? Or did you just approach it as a new fight?
You know, I approached it as a new fight. It was also a special, it was kind of a different situation. Just the fact that I was coming off that my first, you know, stoppage from Ortega, and I wanted to just get that one back. And I mean, I think the fact that the fight was a little different was, I think Cub approached it a little different too. You know, first fight, he kind of came after me. This fight, he was really worried about the takedown, so he was able to negate that a little bit. But you know, I tried to approach it as this new fight altogether. A fight that I needed to win.
So, Frankie, if you're giving me advice at 40 and I'm going into this rematch, what do you tell me in terms of preparation? Same guy as the first time? Rematch, don't try to top the performance? How do you? That's what I'm asking in the sense, like, how do I approach this rematch with Miocic? There's very few guys
don't
I
respect worry about
enough
trying to
take.
top anything or do anything. Just fight to the best that you can. That's every time.
Yeah.
As long as you fight to the best you can that day and show up that day, I think that's what it is. You don't have to be the best fighter. I don't know if it's a Jack Dempsey quote or something, but like, you don't got to be the best fighter, but for 5 rounds, a couple times a year, that's when you got to be the best, and that's when it matters.
Yeah. Frankie, so let's get an update on you boys. Marlon's getting ready for his title fight with Henry Cejudo. How's the preparation going at the camp? And how good is it to have another guy? Because for a long time, right, you were the guy with Mark Henry, who's Nick, I mean, we all know, but one of the most phenomenal mixed martial arts minds and coaches and trainers in the entire game, who we respect greatly. It was Frankie Edgar's team, though. But now you're surrounded by high-level, high-ranked guys. I beat Magomed Sharipov. Marlon Moraes, Corey Anderson. How's it feel to just be building this great team around a core that you and Mark built essentially together?
It's amazing, you know. Me, Mark, Ricardo, we kind of figured this out on the fly, you know. And to have all these guys come and join our team has been, it's been amazing, you know. And I think that's kind of also, you know, is a tribute to my longevity. Is these young dudes are keeping me on my toes, man. I don't want to be the guy in the room getting submitted, getting taken down. So they keep me on my P's and Q's because they're coming. And, you know, they're definitely the future of the sport.
And how's the preparation for Marlon going as he heads into the title fight with Cejudo?
Yeah, Marlon looks great, man. Everything's firing on all cylinders. He's excited for this. You know, he his last couple fights, man, he really turned the switch. And he's starting to believe. And I think, you know, a confident person is a dangerous person, and he's super confident right now.
I mean, just an absolute killer. From the first, the UFC debut didn't go his way, and then just dominant as he's made his run towards the title. Now, before we let you go, let me talk to you about things that are even more important than anything. The boys. Are the boys wrestling yet?
I got my my 8-year-old, my middle guy wrestles. My older one was wrestling for a little bit. He kind of doesn't like it. I make him train. I don't make him compete. But my little guy's wrestling. And we're doing all right. We just went to the Pop and Flow Nationals. We had a tough weekend, man. He's he wrestled at 55. He only weighs about 51. So he had a tough weekend, but, you know, it's all a learning experience.
Frank, as a wrestling dad now, because you're a wrestling dad, you don't take any weight off of him because the weight below 55 is 50. You're not going to make him lose a pound.
No, no way. I can't do it, man. I just can't.
Is this part of the mentality?
I don't even do it. That's what I was going to say right now. I'm going to make him do it.
Is that part of the mentality as to why you're fighting at 55 for so long?
Yeah, I mean, I cut. You know, I wrestled 41 in college, so I cut some weight. But I mean, I fought 55 because there was no other weight at the time. That's why I ended up there.
So, Frank, last thing. March happens. March Madness, right? The Great Dayton Fix is wrestling a bad guy, right?
Get out of here.
Hey, Frankie.
Stop it.
Frankie, wait, listen. The great kid that Dayton Fix is wrestling a guy, a bad guy.
And Nick, he's a bad guy.
Let me explain
this to
you.
Hey, we're all bad guys from Jersey. We're all bad guys. Hey,
Nick, let me explain this to you before Frank loses his mind.
Yeah, I'm lost.
I post a picture of a blatant headgear grab, which is the thing we wear on our ears. It stops the great Dayton Fix from securing the takedown.
We go to this slow-mo. Hey, you put anything in slow motion, it looks bad.
So, Frankie Edgar, can I finish my thought? You are being very Jersey right now and very aggressive and scary.
All right, go ahead.
You scared me, Frankie. Okay, so Dayton's wrestling this kid named Nick Soriano. Not a bad guy. I'm just kidding. He's the enemy because he's not an Oklahoma State guy. He's a Rutgers kid. Great kid. Ashnault, great kid. Rutgers has had a phenomenal year. Dayton Fix, who is by, for all intents and purposes, one of the greatest talents college wrestling has seen in a long time. He's wrestling Soriano, who's just a beast. Dayton, they're in double overtime. First thing first, Frankie. Dayton gets two legs in, flattens him out. Referee calls a stalemate. Can you agree with me, Frank? Will your Jersey bias allow that should not have been stopped? You to say that.
I mean, I mean... if we're talking about my Jersey bias, of course not. But I'm not.
We've got him flattened out on the ground. They call stalemate. Secondly, they go to overtime, Nick. And if you can see my hands, right?
Yeah.
Dayton does this beautiful pass by. Soriano goes flying past his weight. As Dayton's going behind him, Soriano grabs him by the headgear, Nick, and pulls him back in front of him. And then takes Dayton down. So
stop
I put a photo up on this. And then guess what my first comment is? Frankie Edgar with one word, stop.
Yeah. Come on. Listen, you slow any. Like, what do you feel about the hands to the face?
That was another one they missed. John throws out the challenge block.
Happy. Come on.
I think that's a stupid rule. There's a triangle, Frank, from the forehead to the nose that you can't touch in wrestling. It's crazy.
I'm going to side with Frankie.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah. So you're siding with Frankie without even knowing wrestling.
I think it's like the NBA. Now they do the replay on, like, whenever a ball gets knocked out of bounds, and it's clearly, like, the one guy pushes it that direction, it might graze someone else's fingertip and they have to overturn it. And it's like, you could do every play like that. So I think this is just DC.
Yeah,
this is just
some
DC
of it's gotta
overthinking
be on the fly. Some of those calls have got to be, you know, human reactions, and a human guy's got to call it.
Exactly. You know, you've got
and
them all.
Human guy said it wasn't a headgear pull. Done.
Yeah.
You got the first thing, Frank, is stop. My friend, I go, Frankie, you got to be kidding. But I knew it though, right? When I put it up there, I was like, somebody from Jersey is going to come up there and say some crazy shit. And it was you.
Yeah,
you know the headgear pool.
That's right. That's right.
You got DC all rattled. When he asked if you were on your way to training, you said on your way back. He looked at his watch and he realized out here that means for you it's almost
12:30, almost 1.
And you're already done with training, and DC's thinking, I wouldn't even be starting my first one. And from there, he got into the, hey, how should I train for my next fight? It was just a weird, you sent him into a tailspin. Then he started.
And I did go into a tailspin, yeah, trying to do what Frankie Edgar
Listen,
does.
DC's Nick, the last guy that needs any insight on what to get ready for a fight, man.
Hey, Frankie, man, thank you so much for joining us, bro. I appreciate it. You are the man. We are longtime fans. I've called your fights. I've watched them from the sideline. I've been an analyst, and I'm telling you, man, it's inspiring to watch you compete. Congratulations on all your success, and good luck in the title fight, man.
I appreciate it, man. DC, always a good time, and I'm always a fan of yours as well. I know your boys. I know you and Holloway got a little, like, a buddy cop movie thing going and stuff, but it's all right. It's all
a buddy cop movie.
All right, fellas. Be good, man.
Hey, thank you so much, champ. We appreciate it. Hey,
and he hung up on you. I mean, you he's in your head.
Hey, Dennis, that needs to be cut out. That needs to be cut out. Him hanging up in my face like that. Yeah, well, I know you guys got a little bit of a buddy cop movie going.
I think that's
actually, you know what?
That's gonna be the Instagram takeaway.
You want to leave it in?
Yeah, Frankie hangs up on DC.
Frankie, that's the Instagram. Yeah. Frankie going, hey, DC, I know you and Holloway got a buddy cop movie going,
and then just slam the phone down.
Laugh, and then just cut out us laughing and just hang up on me.
The, I was working on my questioning. I was working on getting one sentence questions out in less than 3 sentences. Oh, was it better? Still started to get a little long winded.
It was better, but I feel as interviewers, at times people go in a circle to get to where they're trying to finish. And
that's what I do. That's what we do daily.
In that game, Nick, in that game of running in a circle to get to the finish line.
Yeah.
You are literally an Olympic champion.
I know. I don't know if it's a big circle or multiple circles, but I can circle like no one else.
Nick runs a mile before he asks.
I found my calling.
Grabs a soda.
Hey, yeah.
Hey, Dennis, Nick's like running a mile, and then he goes, "Hey, how's your day, Frankie?" Yeah.
Grabs popcorn.
Yeah. Yeah. When I'm trying to walk from the bedroom to the kitchen, I go through the yard.
That is crazy. That is so crazy. What do you think about the Holloway fight, though, Frankie Holloway? I agree. You know, I feel like...
We didn't answer yet.
I feel like this is Frankie's last chance, right?
Are we here? He just said, what do you guys think about the fight? I agree.
And then no, I'm saying how I feel as I ask you.
You know, he's had... even when you were asking him that, he said, he's just literally... when I was looking up his fight history last night, I'm like, he's been around for so long. Like that Gray Maynard, those Gray Maynard fights were some of the craziest things I'd ever seen. Dennis, your coffee's about to fall over. And then, but that was 8 years ago. Yeah. And then it feels like so many times, like, oh, it's Frankie's last chance. Then he got overlooked by Connor, and it felt like, avoided by Connor. And it was like, he's not going to get that chance.
Yeah.
He just feels like he's just always going to be there.
I remember him in True Life, that MTV documentary. Like
About that.
Yeah, that's when I started following him after I saw
that. Way to pipe into the interview.
I just remembered that.
You got to check your mic, see if it works.
Yeah. He was on True Life.
Yeah.
I want to be a mixed martial arts fighter or something like that.
Yeah.
There's certain guys, like, I mean, you guys are both the same way. They don't seem to age in MMA years as much as everyone else, you know?
It's crazy because for me, I feel like a lot of it has to do with not taking so much damage.
Yeah.
Whereas Frankie has taken damage and is still able to fight and compete at this type of level, it's insane. It's insane that he's still here after being at the top for so long. I mean, this is UFC title fight number 8. Yeah. 8 UFC championship fights. 8 times he's made the walk knowing there's a big gold belt on the line when he steps into the octagon. That's crazy.
And then probably another, what, five or six, where his number one contender.
Yeah.
Oh, he's fight. Always had big, it's always big fights. It's yeah. never just filler fights. You know, like I remember when he stuck him in there with Yair Rodriguez. You remember when they put him in there with Yair Rodriguez and Yair was supposed to be the up and coming
guy? Yeah,
you
thought it was like his coronation fight.
Tried,
yeah.
They tried to make Frankie a stepping stone. He put it on that boy.
Yeah.
Frankie put it on that boy, man. It was bad. It was hard to watch. It was hard to watch.
The other thing that's amazing is like the I mean, he's like at least he's had so many little rivalries within the career, right? And he's had some that went his way and some that didn't go his way. So he's had the guys that like he's going to be the one that they're thinking about when they're 70 years old. And then he's got a couple guys that he's going to be thinking about, but then it just balances out because
he's so awesome.
Yeah. So I've like, I've wanted to ask him about that, but I didn't about like coming back from finding a guy he just can't get past, but then having that just be a blip on his radar and just like then becoming that guy to the next guy and then becoming that guy to the next guy. And then,
yeah,
you know, it was interesting. It was interesting when I was looking back at it. But yeah, it's I mean,
what,
I was
I well, think yeah. I'm sorry.
No, I was gonna say the one camp thing, like, so I got into that last night and then I started thinking, who is an example of a guy who's kind of been at or near the top and then switched camps and gone on to greater things?
You know, and George St. Pierre. George St. Pierre was doing really well at TriStar and then he started co-training down at Jackson's and he stayed the course.
That's true. But where did he end up? Did he end up back up at TriStar or did he stay at Jackson till the end?
He was always going back and forth, but then towards the end he just stayed training up in Canada.
Yeah.
But he did well. I think a guy that really shot through the roof when he switched camps was Robbie Lawler. When Robbie Lawler went to the American Top Team, he went from being a guy that was good to, you know, world champion. Tyron Woodley was a guy that was doing really well at American Top Team in Florida. Then he started training at Duke Rufus, right? And he became the world champion. Right. And
well, you passed the test. You put a couple holes in my theory.
In the theory, well, there's a few. Well, Robbie Lawler wasn't a world champion when he went to ATT. Though he was a guy that was good.
Yeah.
And became a world champ. Tyron Woodley was on the cusp of a title fight and became a world champ by switching camps. But the vast majority of the time, when those guys switch late, it doesn't benefit you because when you're switching camps late in your career, most times you're searching for answers, right? It's like the guy that loses a fight and immediately switches weight classes.
Yeah.
It's like you're trying to fix something. And most times, if you just stay within what you're doing, you guys can fix it as a team together. That comes down to loyalty, though. And I never would imagine Frankie, a guy that's jersey through it through, would leave the coaches that Ricardo Almeida and Mark Henry, the guys that he's been with for so long.
Yeah, I mean, you saw even Kevin Lee got me thinking about this too, because he, you know, if you, I don't know if you saw the Instagram post afterwards where he's like, "This shit sometimes just makes me, you know, I did everything perfect,
yeah,
I had everything going, and it's just like I can understand where you just get to a point where you've only got two choices, right? You got three choices. You can, the one that sucks is if you got to the point where you just accept like this is it, this is where I'm getting to." Right. Uh-huh. And then the other one is to say, no, fuck that. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, but I'll just different circumstances, another chance, et cetera, et cetera. And then the other one is to kind of put it on some outside thing and be like, maybe it's my camp. Maybe it's my coach. Maybe it's my weight class.
I think the majority of people do that, though. Right. Yeah. The majority of people are more likely to try to shift the blame as opposed to I did this.
Yeah.
So when I got beat by Jones the first time, I was questioning, but not in a sense that I was questioning who fucked this up for me. It was more of how do I get back, right? Yeah. So the immediate reaction was, how do I get back to do this again? And then the second time after he beat me and I got finished that time, I took it all within myself. I was like, God, if I just needed to stay the course. I should not have been in there talking. I should not have been in there not 100% laser focused. And then maybe I don't miss that kick, you know? Obviously, he did a good job of setting it up with a lot of body work and everything prior. But it was all on me. I never looked at Javier Mendez and went, Coach, you didn't train me to do this. Because he has.
Yeah.
I didn't go to Bob Cook and say, you didn't get me ready for this. Because he has. You know, I think the guys that try to cast blame are the ones that never truly never go and fix it. Just like Frank, right? When Frank lost to Brian Ortega, people were like, he should go to 135. Frankie's like, no, I'm just going to make this right by just improving in the areas that cost me this fight. Now he finds himself right back where he was before.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same. It's not just fighting. It's, I guess it's the same in life or business, right? Like even for us, we open a new location and you realize, hey, you just got to pound the pavements one person at a time, invite them in, give them a good experience. They'll come back. But you're always looking for that, like, or maybe we could just do this ad and instantly it'll work. And then, or people just, you know, every walk of life, like, I'm not happy with this, so I'm going to use this to make me happier. But it's, but fighting's tough because it's just a little more.
Well, it's so definitive, right? Like, it's so definitive. If you do shit wrong, like Kevin Lee, right? Like, Kevin Lee now finds himself in a situation where at 155, he made it all the way to the interim title fight, right? And was doing well against Tony Ferguson. First round of that fight, Kevin Lee is on top, full mount, beating the shit out of Tony Ferguson. Gets tired and gets submitted. You can point to, well, the weight cut was really taxing on his body. He's a big guy.
Yeah.
Goes up to 170, starts really well against RDA. Then he gets tired, gets finished. You know, so it's like, if he starts to look for, now this is one of those scenarios, right, where you've done, you've exhausted some of the options. You went up in weight. You've eliminated that brutal weight cut. Now what is left? You know, I mean, for him, maybe a little different. I don't know if he needs new coaches, but maybe outsourcing a little bit of the training is one of those, in that situation, may be beneficial. Like Aaron Pico. Aaron Pico is now down at Jackson's training camp.
Yeah, right. I was thinking about him when I was talking about camps.
He was training down with Antonio McKee. Then he was training with Freddie Roach, and it didn't work out. So now Aaron Pico, who at this point in his career is what, 5-2, 4-2?
Yeah.
Has to decide, what can I do? How can I completely turn this over to someone that knows how to remake and rebuild a career? He chooses Greg Jackson, who is one of the greatest minds in the sport. And then you see what happens. What if he skyrockets?
Yeah.
Then he made the right decision, you know. But I think maybe for Kevin Lee, it might be time to start looking into some of those things to try and fill in the gaps in terms of why and where is he missing something that's leading to these cardio issues? Because for him, it's all about the cardio, I think.
Yeah, there's certain, that's what I had jotted down. There's certain guys where you just know they're going to get tired. And it's almost, when I was watching the fight, I was thinking, should there be guys where they just, they're honest with themselves and they just, well, two parts I wanted to ask you. One, can anyone get to the same place cardio-wise, or are some guys just naturally not going to be able to get to the same place? And then two, are there some guys that, like Kevin Lee seems like a good example, where it's like, you're better in 3-round fights than 5-round fights. Is, you know, it, would it be too hard mentally to be like, you know what? I'm just going to fucking kick ass in 3-round fights. I'm not going to get that title, but just give me the biggest money fights I can get in 3-round fights. And, or is that just a fighter would never even understand that?
That mentality.
That mentality.
I don't think you can get a guy like Kevin Lee, who's from like Detroit, grew up with not much. And, you know, his whole life has been a pursuit of something so big, to say, I just want to be average. Because to not
be
in
those 5-round, I mean, it's not,
it's not in the sport, right? Yeah. Like, to just not be in, to not be competing for world titles, or with the hope of training for a world title or desire to be a world champion, then the mentality is average. And maybe that's what, maybe that's wrong. Maybe I'm wrong in that idea, but that's what makes me. It's like, if I'm not competing to be the best in the world, then I feel like my mentality would be just to be an average fighter.
So
don't want
to
do that.
What do you think the cardio issue is? Do you think he's got too much
muscle?
He's
got a lot of muscle. He's got a lot of muscle, I think. And, you know, he expends a lot of energy early, right? He fights at a pace. Like, even Saturday as I'm watching him, I'm like, this is such a high pace. And, you know, RDA can go all night. It's like the pace he put on Anthony Pettis was, that was hard to watch because he just went so hard for the entire 25 minutes.
Yeah.
But then you watch Kevin, and Kevin must have thought in his preparation, I've got to outwork this dude. So he tried, but the guy with the natural cardio and the guy that has shown to have better cardio over the course of their careers was the one that's cardio withheld the pace and the pressure, and eventually he wore Kevin out. And nothing's worse than being in an arm triangle when you're tired. When you're tired and you're in an arm triangle where you can't breathe.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you going to do? You know, like.
Yeah.
I thought Lee fought pretty good, but you asked about the cardio. Like, do some guys just naturally have more cardio? I believe that. I think Cain Velasquez was a guy that just had really good natural cardio because he could come off the street and still do a hard three rounds. I think a lot of us wrestlers have good base cardio because we work so hard over the course of our lives, and then we just continue to push and press to try to improve on that cardio. And it's honestly a lot of just situations. Like, if you and I are running, you probably will outrun me. But the moment I start grabbing you and holding you and just squeezing you and then you're squeezing me,
like
first
terrible.
Minute you feel fine. But then by minute two and three, your arms start to blow up with oxygen and blood and you start to get fatigued. It's just not natural to you. And I think, like, Kevin, who's been a wrestler for a long time, for some reason he hasn't developed that ability to just really pace himself.
Yeah.
And you know another thing, Nick? We've actually mastered the art of looking more busy than we really are as wrestlers. Yeah. Like, John Smith used to always tell me that when I take Steve Mako to run. He'd be like, take Steve down to the track and make him run. I'm like, okay. And he goes, and make him run. He's like, don't let him trick you into thinking he's running harder than he is, because Steve will be running. And he's like, he's like huffing and puffing, but the reality is his legs are barely running. You know what I'm saying? So, like, make his ass run. Don't let him trick you into making you seem like he's running harder than he is. So we've mastered the ability to make guys think we're going a lot harder than we are at times.
So at a base level, though, you think, like, say you have you line up six guys at AKA. They're all about the same height, same age, same weight. Their max cardio level is not going to be the same, right? So some of them are like, you're a 10, you're a 9, you're an 8. And then, like, even if they all work to perfection and they just work their asses off, they'll have different levels of cardio. And the only the balancer, right, would be if the guy with a max of 10 doesn't work as hard and the guy with a max of 9 works as hard, then they're even. Is that kind of how it is?
I think a lot of things goes into cardio too. Like Max Holloway, right? Yeah, so, for example, Max, he has phenomenal cardio. I think Jose Aldo always had great cardio too. But when they're in there fighting, Max is just relaxing and flowing, whereas Aldo's like...
so tense.
He's so tense, right? So, like, not only does your cardio level have to be high, you also got to have an ability to relax, be comfortable in the face of the fire, and just...
I guess that's true. Even for us at the gym, when we're just doing combos and just cardio boxing, and we're doing combos that we're holding our breath, you're fucking falling apart afterwards.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And if you just breathe, and it's not as hard. So back to Pico. You like how I just compared Dennis and I at a cardio boxing gym to world class athletes? No, but that's frustrating. I was rooting for Kevin Lee, and I you just it's hard when you're rooting for a guy and you just see the cardio going, and you're like, now he's getting tired, and it's like then all of a sudden five rounds. Kevin's grown on me,
right? Initially, our relationship, I don't know what it was. Initially, like, our relationship wasn't the best, and I don't know where it stemmed from. But then there was a time right after I lost to Jones the second time. And maybe it was because I talked a lot of trash with me and Jones about the fight, and I got what was coming to me. I lost. He said something on Twitter, and then people showed me, right? Because in that moment when I was at my lowest, everybody wanted me to see everything that everybody said. So I saw Kevin's and said something like, he's gonna cry in the car, you know, like Friday.
I remember that now.
Right,
and you guys and then, had a little back and forth,
and then like a little bit later when people were piling on, he pivoted. He was like, nah, fuck that. He was like, you know, man, this dude gave his all, you know, like, it's hard to see a man give so much of himself and then his emotion gets the best of him, and it's like, we shouldn't kick him. And I don't know where that came from, but in that moment I said, okay, you know, it's a young guy, you know, and the young guy, you can see a sense of maturity in him. And then from that day forward, you know, like, we started to have a much more pleasant relationship. Now I consider him a, a buddy of mine, and I think he's a good guy. And you know, you want to watch him do well, but watching the fight, RDA, you know, he's just a gentleman across the board. Have never been anything but, you know. So, yeah. With these fights, when you're a guy like me, who tends to get along with everybody, you really don't have a horse in the race. You just hope that both guys come out healthy and they put on a good show.
Yeah. So what about Pico? So why is, I guess I've always been surprised that Pico never ended up at AKA.
Yeah, it's so weird. It was so weird.
Like, why is it?
So he came a few times, right? He came a few times up, and you know, when he was with Bob, and he would come up and he would stay with Bob, and he would train, and he would just make these massive improvements. But then, like, he was down home in SoCal, and he would just train at all these specialized places, right? He would do jiu-jitsu with Eddie Bravo, and then he would box with Freddie Roach, and he was doing MMA with Antonio McKee, and it just felt like it was the perfect situation because he was the center and the focus of everything. And he liked it. You know, he was around his family. You know, he's got a girlfriend that works for him, and all this stuff just was perfect for Aaron. And then after the last one, I guess he decided he needed to make a change. And if I got to be honest with you, like, AKA is, it's not, I don't know if it's an option because of the relationship with Dwayne and Bob has dissolved, right? He's not managed by Dwayne and Bob anymore.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No. He left. He left a while ago. And when he left, I don't know if AKA was an option anymore. I'm not really in those conversations, but when he left the management and he was looking for a team, I guess he was he went to the option that was available to him, and he went to Jackson's.
That makes more sense.
But yeah, I think he would have been great there, right? Like, if he would have been there in preparation for his fight,
I thought he'd get out of high school and go straight to AKA.
That's what should have happened. Yeah. That's what should have happened. If he would have fought Ben before his last fight at AKA, he would have been preparing at the same exact time as Khabib was preparing for Conor.
Yeah.
He would have had Khabib Nurmagomedov to train with every single day, and that would have been great. That would have been great, but he didn't do that.
Yeah.
What about a lot of people think they're a lot smarter than they are at times, and when he,
hey, you don't need to take shots at us.
No. When he made his decision, you know, as a man, you got to stand firm with him. And yeah, that's what he's doing. Proud of him.
What about Jones' comments about heavyweight?
You know, I don't know what to make of it. You know, there are times in my relationship with Jones, and where there are times when the athletic respect will shine through. And I think that was one of those instances, whereas there have been times when I am asked about him and it shines through. You know, when I applaud him for his ability, I applaud him for his diversity, I applaud him for his ability to train hard. There are a lot of things about John Jones that I do respect athletically. I really do. And the things that he said just tells me the same thing. But I think people misunderstand that even though Jones and I have had this real tumultuous relationship, athletically, I don't think it's ever been stated that I don't think he's a fantastic fighter. I've said that every single chance I had. From the moment I first earned a title fight to even today after I've lost to the guy twice, I just think he's easily you know, one of the greatest talents we've ever seen in mixed martial arts and one of the best fighters we've ever seen. And not only based on the fact that he's defended the belt on so many occasions, but also I think that for me personally, I know how hard I work and I know how much time and effort I put into this. And for him to have been able to beat me on two occasions tells me how special the kid is.
Do you take anything from Frankie? Like having, I mean, Frankie had Ben Henderson and Aldo, and it doesn't yeah. it doesn't feel like it torments him like the same way it torments you. Like what do you think the difference is?
I just think that, you know, Frankie beat Benson Henderson, right? Did he beat him?
No, he lost twice. He lost twice to Henderson. And he lost to Aldo
twice to times. Aldo.
But then he beat Gray twice, and he beat BJ three times.
But think about this though, like there was not all the bad blood and all the history yeah. that we've shared. You know, like we've shared in this 5 years, because this started in 2014.
Yeah,
in this 5 years, we've shared a lifetime of just.
So it's more. Bad. It's a combination of the person. It's a combo. It's like you just said, athletically. So there's a combination of athletically, but it's also.
I think,
it's also
but at its person. Core, I think a lot of this was a lot of everything between Jones and I is truly, truly based in competitiveness. Yeah. And if we were able to keep that to that arena, we would have been much better for it over the course of these last 5 years, but we weren't able to. And, that's why we are where we are today. But, you know, we're on two different paths right now, and we're both kind of doing what we do. You know, I'm winning and defending this heavyweight title. He's winning and defending the light heavyweight title. And that's kind of what it is right now. And, you know, he's got Santos. I've got Miocic. And
why are you so competitive? How'd you end up so competitive?
Bro, I don't know. Nick, I mean,
you gotta
I swear
switch.
To God,
you got to switch for anything. It's like you can tell it'd be so competitive.
I don't know, Nick. Like, it's the craziest thing in the world, man. Like, I think I found athletics at a very young age. And then when I realized the joy I felt when I was successful, I knew that I didn't want to be unsuccessful. And so I just put every part of me into it. And plus, it's almost like my whole life I was told, if I just work extremely hard, right? If I do all the right things and I just train and train and train and live my life in the way it's supposed to be, good things will come, right? And that's like, and so when I do that and I go through a 10-week camp and I'm exhausted every day at 38, 39 years old, at the end of this thing, I'm supposed to get a good thing, you know? Like, and so when it doesn't happen, it's like, fuck.
What
sucks,
about, so you know? Say you're playing Madden with someone. And you're like, and you lose.
It's bad, bro.
Like,
it's bad.
Do you just kind of laugh it off, or an hour later, is it just like still irking
you? I'm stewing. Nick, I sit there. I constantly complain about the referees missing calls. Like, I'm playing NBA 2K. I'm like, oh my God, this dude missed another call. I'm like, wow, they just shoot. So, what would happen is, I would sit at my house, and me and my cousins would all play basketball. And like, if one guy was up like 10 free throws, regardless if you know you're mashing that X button to try to steal the ball, you're like, oh, of course they're going to call a foul on my team but not yours. You know, they just always call for the Warriors. It's like legitimately thinking and feeling like I'm getting cheated. I don't know how it became that way. And you know it, knowing me personally, that I'm not putting on. It just is who I am.
So what burns more, like the the Rockets' annual collapse, or it's if you so were to lose a game of 2K to your cousin?
I mean, I hate when the Rockets lose, right? I hate when the Rockets lose. When the Rockets lose to the Warriors, it sucks. But you know that the only team that can beat them has beaten them, right? Mm-hmm. So that's maybe that's comforting.
Debatable.
I mean, we should have been on the bottom half of that bracket. We'd be in the finals right now playing against the Warriors. So stupid. I just hate how you like to give digs at me and shit, though. Well, just know that the Saints have been throttling the Raiders lately, so live in that.
Hey, the Raiders abandoned me. I abandoned them. I gave up on football.
So you're back on the 49ers. You remember that when we would like go back and forth?
That was a 1 year. Like, okay. That was a 1 year aberration. That was an attempt. Like, okay, I was trying to raise my son as a Niners fan so he could be with his friends, and it was just imposterville. I'm back now. Horrible. Now I'm back on the Browns. When I was from seventh grade until they moved
it's
to Baltimore,
so,
I was on the
it's
Browns.
It's so hard to like the Browns right now. Like, this is the year this guy.
No, but that's the hard part. So last year, I ended up at dinner in Burlingame. The Browns all came to a restaurant down there, and Wynn invited me down. So I was like, oh, you know, I sat there. It was when Streeter was on the Browns, and it was all their quarterbacks and receivers. And so I thought, all right, when I was a kid, I used to have Browns News Illustrated on my wall. I'm going to root for the Browns because I have no one else to root for. Yeah. But then when they got, it's like, I think it's part of being raised as a Warriors fan is like, it's almost like I can't support the Browns now because they got Beckham. They're the hot team. You know, you want to, like, I think certain people are raised to just root for shitty teams. And like you want that, like, you want that street cred of picking the shitty team and rooting for it. And it's hard when they're
when they come. And then when they come up, you're like, nope, I've been on this bandwagon. It's
Like with the Warriors, you have to, you know, it's like you feel like, I probably overthink it, but you just, like, right now I'm wearing a Warriors hat. And I just feel like you walk down the street and you feel like half people are going, you probably just got that yesterday. You know?
Yeah,
it's just
for
like
sure.
That.
I thought so too.
Yeah.
When I first met you, I was like, okay, this dude's gonna pretend like the Warriors. Okay.
The okay. struggle is the fun part as a fan. I mean, because like you there needs to be a struggle, so then you just appreciate like the Warriors' first championship. It wasn't even like celebrate. It was just holy shit. Turn the TV off, walk outside, and just be like, there's no way this just fucking happened.
Hey, bro, I swear that's how I was with the Saints. And then. We started thinking that sports were rigged. I was like, because of Hurricane Katrina, now they had to give us something real good. I'm like, the NFL made it. No, seriously. Have you ever noticed that teams win? And we may have discussed this last year, but like, I felt like they had to give us something good, man. A title in the Superdome. I just was like, when we won that Super Bowl, I was in Oklahoma, sitting in my living room. We won, interception, run back on Peyton Manning, and it was over. And, oh, well, do you remember the big, giant ball Sean Payton showed by kicking that onside kick at the beginning of the second half? Oh, yeah. It was just like, everything was perfect, and I was like, man, Hurricane Katrina was 3 years ago, and now we won a Super Bowl. Like, fucking shit's rigged, man. Like, how's it happen?
Well, it's like Anthony Davis puts New Orleans through hell all year, and then all of a sudden, oh, here's Zion.
Zion Williams, there you go. Now he can leave. Like, this is crazy. Yeah. All of a sudden, here's Zion. Now, there you guys go. Give me a few examples more of like natural disasters and.
Well, wasn't 9/11? The Yankees won after 9/11.
The Yankees won after 9/11. But no, it was more than just that. No, the Yankees won all the time, right? It's like the Warriors now.
That's good. But like, recall there, Dennis.
Remember?
Who was that? Like, who was it recently?
Well, that's crazy. The Warriors win all the time. The Warriors, they won in 1975, and they made the playoffs like three times before 2014 or something.
Remember when you guys won the first title and I bandwagon jump and I put that picture up of Tim Hardaway, Chris Mullins, and Stacy Alderman, who was the third guy on that team?
Mitch Richmond. Run TMC.
And I put this one's for the old guard. Tonight we finally win a title. You remember that?
Yeah, you haven't been doing that as much lately. You were always on the my new favorite team, and people would just get so mad at you.
Tonight, Dennis, I put tonight we do it for the old guard. Let's go Warriors. Everybody was so mad at me. But then it became so transparent that people were just like getting pissed off. And I was like, okay, let me give it a break. But I'm just waiting for a title to be So this year, the only reason I didn't do it in football because I was still so hurt about the Saints. But, this year.
Last year, we tried to root for the Jag. We decided we were going to be on the Jag wagon. We were like, let's pick a shitty team that's like has the potential to be good, historically shitty team that has potential to be good. So we picked the Jaguars last year. We even ordered like Jagwagon hats and T-shirts.
Yeah, ready to go.
and then they started losing, and we just like realized, well, we have no fucking tie to the Jaguars.
Straight
There's
to
no
the
reason
trash.
To keep fucking rooting for them. And then I went to dinner with the Browns, and I was like, I'm on the Browns. Now it could be that dinner spurred a winning streak, but I'm not gonna take full credit for it.
Oh, fucking crazy!
You know what I was
man.
For?
The
I
Jags.
Was hoping,
Who would ever liked the Jags?
I was hoping. Lamar Jackson went to the Saints. It was close, right? Wasn't it? It was like the Saints, the Jags, and the Ravens could have all had him.
Yes, but then he's still. We need a quarterback, right? We need a quarterback. The guy that I can't remember number 7. He does everything, but I don't know if he's going to be the guy that replaces Drew. I'm a little bit worried about that. Let me ask you a question. The boxing gyms.
Yeah. Dozen.
How are those going? Dozen boxing. How's that going?
Good. Got the first location up and running. Been testing it for a while. Ready to expand. Morgan Hill, perhaps?
Yeah, Morgan Hill would be great. Hey, I'm very interested in getting the gym down there. I believe the people of Morgan Hill would love having a great, nice, beautiful boxing gym to come and train at. And
you know what's funny is like, it's, I mean, I'm 46, so I feel like, I feel as energetic at 46 as I felt probably more energetic than I did at 26 and 36. But what's cool about it is, it's, even though it's just cardio boxing, right? We're just boxing and we're just alternating between punching Bob the dummy and then doing body weight stuff on the grounds. Like, it feels like I, like when no one's around, right? I'm fucking walking to the shower and I'm like flexing it, like I'm like, yeah, brother, my biceps says, and I'm going, all right, I'm in fucking camp. I don't want to do this again today, but I got to fucking do it. Like, I yeah. went on Saturday and Sunday. Sunday, I woke up all sore and tired, and I was like, for some reason, I remembered when we were at the old AKA, and I think we went to lunch, and you had to get out of the truck, and you're like, oh, man, it's only Wednesday, and I can't yeah. get out of the fucking truck. I'm so sore. And it, so I think it's fun to relate. You know, I'm never going to get, obviously, never going to fight or do anything like at a super competitive level. But I think what's fun is even just by your, between yourself and some boxing dummy, right? Like getting into like,
yeah,
it's my camp, and I, and you start to feel better, and you see like a video, and you're like, oh, my hands are higher, and this, that, and the other. Like, I, there's something about it, which is, I was talking to someone the other day, like if you just go work out, it's working out. But whether it's boxing, and I'm sure people get the same way with jiu-jitsu and wrestling, even when they're not trying to compete at it, like you feel like, you feel like you're learning a skill, and but you have guys like you and all these guys that are up there on a pedestal that you almost like pretend to be, right? I remember when when Gilbert fought, was it Diego Sanchez, where he was winning the fight easy and he had no reason to sit there and say, let's just fucking,
yeah, know, it was bite on our mouth guards and go Houston. At it. I fought against Roy Nelson. It was crazy.
Yeah, and I remember just being at the gym after that and being getting tired and being like, I'm fucking tired. I'm fucking Gilbert Melendez in the pocket. Let's go. And it's like, so I think, you're like, yeah, you guys like inspire, you guys inspire a lot of that. And I think it's a, yeah, but that's why I'm excited about the gym, is because I feel like we've created something where it does feel like you're training and you're actually fighting. And
yeah,
you're, you know, the instructor a lot of times will be like, I know it sucks. I know you're fucking tired, but you're in a fight. Like, what did you, you know, we've tried to structure it like a fight. Not just like do this for a minute, do that for a minute. Like you're going back and forth, and even the examples you're given of like, it helps relate to these things because you're talking about guys getting tired, and it's different when you're running versus wrestling and all that. And it's like, yeah, when we're, you know, it's weird how you could do like squats become a break in the middle of a workout, but then all of a sudden a six punch combo over and over again where you're probably holding your breath because your form's shitty and you're about to fall over. So, anyways, yeah, you got, obviously I'm passionate about it, so you got me all fired up on it. But I was going to take today off, but I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe not today. I got to fucking stay in camp here.
When you go through that answer, you are obligated now to every person that listens to the Talk and Talk podcast to go and get that work and then put it on your Instagram or your Twitter, telling them that you got the work in. You got to show them that you got the work in.
You know, we had Maurice Claret on the startup podcast we're doing. We interviewed him, and he was like, the reason I post myself working out every day is not to show off like, hey, I worked out again. It's, there's an accountability where I don't want to let the audience down, that even though they're not, they don't care if I work out, and they're not like, it's an accountability. And so I started doing that, and I haven't done it as much lately because I just felt like this is just, no one really gives a shit that I'm working out every day. But like, but it got me into just, you know, we all need those little things. We all, none of us have like this, especially those of us that aren't as competitive. We don't have that, like, this maybe something driving us, and those little things do help. Like, you know, it's like, yeah, oh, fuck, I didn't work out today. I've only got 5 fucking Twitter followers, but someone's going to be like, hey, what's up? No workout today? And so it gets you through it, which all the shit you learn when I get older, I wish I knew all this stuff when I was younger. I don't understand not working out basically from like 18 to,
I know, same here.
35 was like pretty stupid. The fuck?
And then so much easier.
Yeah, the other day I was at the gym. I was like, we finished the workout, and I'm like, how old are you guys? And they're like 24, 25, 26. I'm like, motherfucker.
I wasted so many years.
Yeah. But that's just, you know, as you get older, I don't know, it could be the same way we talked about switching camps and like trying to justify things in your head versus you just realize it's a choice. You could do this shit, and you're going to, in theory, put yourself in a position that your internal age is less than your actual age, or you're not going to, you know, and this, not to turn this into a fucking senior citizen podcast, but it's crazy when you when you get to this age, like when you're in your 20s, everyone is kind of like in their 20s, and then you get to when you get to 40, the difference of there's people who are 40 that look like they're 20, there's people that are 40 that look like they're 60, and there's people that are 40 that look like they're 40, and it's just a weird, you know, it's like it's weird when you realize like it's your fucking choice, you know, you just gotta do shit.
At 40, you're a kid nowadays. You know, I'm 40 years old now, so they always say 40 is like the new 30 or 40 is the new 20. I'm taking it all the way back to 30, you know, when I first got started in this game.
Yeah, well, you keep getting older. You keep getting older, so the past always seems younger. So when you say 40, that feels to me like, ah, fuck, that's young. Yeah. But then at 40, you know, I guess, yeah, I guess we don't want to stop aging. If we stop aging, we got a problem. Yeah, so
if we stop aging, we got a problem. Well, boys, it has been another phenomenal show. I appreciate every week I get to spend some time with you boys. You know, la 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 la. I love you. Hey, you know, I love spending time with my boys.
I'm fired up.
Hey, thank Frankie Edgar for stopping by. Hey, for Nick Swimmer, Dennis Rodriguez, my boy Daniel Cormier, Talking Talker Podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in. See you next week.
All right, see you later. Really trying to fuck with Hollywood Co. I'm with Marla G, bro. Flying Hollywood chicks to my